Hanged Man, Part 2. Soray goes to the station and drowns himself in work. He does the Sorrento paperwork and then volunteers to get everybody's perps booked. He does 3 or 4 interviews, a breaking and entering, 2 assaults, and a fraud, and is in the middle of playing bad cop to Huey's good cop when he catches a glimpse of himself in the room's 2-way mirror. He's wearing tan slacks, his own brown-flecked sports jacket, and Fraser's red tie. And maybe showing up at work in your partner's clothes ain't exactly a hot ticket to Inconspicuousville. He can't think about this right now. Around 4:30, Fraser shows up, and he's that other guy, the one in the red serge and the hat, the one Ray isn't fucking. And to Ray's relief, everything's perfectly normal. "Sorry I'm late, Ray," Fraser says, perching on the edge of Ray's desk, taking his hat off and twirling it between his hands a couple of times before settling it down on his knee, just like always. "I've had a bit of a day." "Ice Queen getting you down?" Ray asks, slouching back in his rolling wood desk chair, which creaks precisely on cue. "The inspector," Fraser amends, just like he always does, "decided that today was the day for us to revisit the controversial issue of 355B, also known as the Ways and Means Test, also known as the Juggernaut." "Oh yeah?" Ray pops a toothpick into his mouth and grins up at him. "So what exactly is the 355B, aka the Ways and Means Test, aka the Juggernaut?" "Ah," Fraser says with only the barest hint of a smirk. "Well, might you ask. And okay, this is all perfectly normal stuff. And when Ray gets a call from dispatch at 6:30, that's perfectly normal. And when Fraser snatches his hat off Ray's desk and follows him out to the car, that's perfectly normal, too. And the dead guy and his screaming wife and the way she's waving that gun around before she breaks down and confesses how her husband was porking her best friend, well, that's just part of an average day for Vecchio and the Mountie. What's not normal, though, is the way Fraser holds the bullpen door open for him but doesn't touch him. And what isn't normal is the way Ray finds himself keeping entirely to his side of the car, and how he doesn't ask Fraser if he wants to get a bite afterwards, because perhaps better not." So Fraser goes back to the consulate, and Ray goes home and throws a frozen dinner in the microwave. He eats it in front of the TV, though when he turns it off, he can't remember anything he's watched. And it's certainly not normal the way he's in bed by 10:30 and jerking off, desperately, into the dark. A couple of days of that, and Ray's ready to take a chance, because if he's going to spend this much energy acting innocent, he at least wants to be guilty. Still, he waits until they're alone in the GTO.
So, Ray says, scratching his neck while they're stopped at a light, and he doesn't know what Fraser hears in his voice, but Fraser's head jerks up instantly. "I've been thinking." "Yes, Ray?" "And geez, from the sound of Fraser's voice, maybe he's not the only one feeling frayed around the edges." "Nothing," Ray says and bites his lip. "Just... lights changed," Fraser says softly. "Thanks," Ray says and hits the gas. Now he's got to find some kind of euphemism for, "Fraser, I'd like to have sex with you," while trying not to get them killed in midtown rush hour traffic. "Just, I was thinking that maybe today, after work, we could..." But that's it. That's all he's got. In his head, the sentence ends, "Go somewhere and fuck." And that's not what he wants to say. Not at all. So Ray tries again. "Look, maybe we can... meet up?" Fraser asks, finishing the sentence. And Ray sighs in relief. He can always rely on Fraser. That's half of what he loves about the guy. "I don't see why not," Fraser says, looking steadily out the front window. And here Fraser falters for a second, but only a second, before saying in a somewhat strangled voice, "The usual place?" "Yeah," Ray breathes, nearly giddy with relief. "The usual place." Which is how the Ashland goes from being the fleabag hotel they stumbled into to the usual place. It doesn't need to be said that they'll take separate routes and meet there. It doesn't need to be said that this time Fraser will pick up the tab. All Fraser has to do is discreetly flash the wad of folded American greenbacks he's got tucked into the pouch on his belt. Ray drops Fraser off at the consulate, then trades the GTO for his CPD Chevy. His leg is shaking excitedly as he drives. Fuck, he can't help but wonder how long Fraser's been carrying that good old American money around. He parks several blocks away and walks through the darkening streets to the Ashland Hotel. For a moment, he can't quite remember where it is. On Ashland, obviously, but where? And he has to go back to the James Hobson Memorial Ballroom and retrace his steps. A couple of blocks, turn the corner, and there it is, across the street. Junior's Liquor looks a lot less seedy in the gray twilight, its neon sign on, but not bright enough to dominate the air. Ray crosses the street nervously, jamming his hands into his jacket pockets. He can feel the sharp corner of a condom packet scraping his right index finger, and a small tube of lube pressing against the knuckles of his left hand. He wants to be discreet here, because maybe they'll need the stuff, and maybe they won't, but properly prepared people are... being properly prepared is... well, whatever, he thinks it's a good thing to bring stuff. He jogs up the steps, pulls the glass door open, and deliberately walks right past the guy in the cage. His peripheral vision tells him it's not the same guy as last time. This guy is 6'2", 50-ish, black. Ray takes the steps two at a time, but stops short on the landing, suddenly nervous. It's just Fraser, he tells himself, but that makes things worse. So scratch that, try again. It wasn't weird last time, and it's not going to be weird now, Ray tells himself, as he slowly walks past 2E, 2D, 2C. It's going to be just like jumping into that beautiful blue Caribbean water. Ray has just taken a deep breath on that thought when the door to 2B flies open, and there's Fraser, wearing jeans and a blue flanneled shirt, and sneakers, and, thank God, Fraser's with the program. Fraser turned himself back into that other guy who isn't the partner he's gone undercover to work with. This guy's got dark hair and blue eyes and looks horny, and Ray feels like something's just grabbed him where he lives and dragged him into the room. Or hey, maybe that's just Fraser. Fraser kisses him and pulls him to the bed and manages to get him undressed all at the same time. Ray himself is having a little more trouble coordinating himself. That's mainly because his hands are shaking, he's so turned on. Fraser is tongue-fucking his mouth and rubbing his cock through his pants. So good. But more than that, Ray can't believe how easy this is, because Ray's never had things easy, not like this. Getting Stella was like scaling Everest, like climbing a sheer cliff face in high, freezing winds. It was 10 years hard work getting her, and then 10 years hard work losing her. And everything since then has been catch as catch can. Begging for scraps, getting a blowjob, or a quick fuck, or a poncho. This, though, this is something else entirely, because Fraser's got him pushed back on the mattress, and Fraser is fondling his cock, and fuck, it's just really, really obvious that Fraser loves him. Which is something new for him, having certainty like that. Ray never had that kind of certainty, even after 22 years with Stella. And that was kind of Stella's charm, that feeling that she might smack you down any second. Even now, Ray doesn't know quite why she married him. And worse yet, sometimes the look on Stella's face says that she's wondering exactly the same thing. Not so with Fraser. Fraser's kissing him hungrily and touching him everywhere, like his skin's made of silk, which it really is not. Fraser's got him sprawled out on the ugly bedspread, and, well, normally, Ray might be a little self-conscious, because he's never had much of a body to begin with, and now he's not even young. But Fraser is staring at him lustfully, milking his cock with one hand while the other strokes up Ray's ribs to his chest and then down along his leg. That's mighty personal, the way Fraser's touching his thigh and making the hair stand up, but it feels okay. It feels right. Then Fraser cups Ray's balls and squeezes gently, and damn, that's really personal. But it's great, too. Ray groans and closes his eyes. It's all he can do to breathe. And then Fraser pushes past another boundary, nudging a finger under Ray's balls and stroking down Ray's perineum to his hole. Ray inhales sharply, and Fraser goes still, which isn't exactly what Ray wants either. So he thrusts his cock up into Fraser's hand to get that moving again. Obviously, Fraser keeps stroking him, squeezing his cockhead hard on every upthrust. Soon Ray is revved up again, and so he takes a deep breath and draws his leg to the side. What's he got to hide, anyway? Nothing, that's what. Hiding is for outside, not here. Here, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And he's braced and ready for when Fraser touches him, because Fraser sounds like he's hyperventilating or something. It's okay, Fraser, Ray murmurs without opening his eyes. Take it easy. And how does it come to be that he's the one getting finger-fucked, but it's Fraser who needs reassurance? Still, that's how it is. Fraser's jerking Ray's cock and working his wet finger into Fraser's asshole and moaning softly like he can't help it. Oh, yeah, Ray gasps as Fraser shoves his finger in up to the knuckle. Do that again, hard, fast, and Fraser does what he asks, sliding his finger home over and over until Ray convulses and comes all over himself. When Ray opens his eyes, his vision's kind of spotty, but he wants to tell Fraser. He has to tell Fraser. Fraser, if you want to, you can fuck me. And then he's blurting out, I brought condoms. Fraser seems too taken aback by Ray's offer to even speak, but he grabs Ray by the hips and turns him over roughly. Ray tries to grab onto the bedspread, but it's made of some kind of synthetic fiber that feels like plastic. It just slides away under his fingers, so he scrambles a bit further up the bed so that he can grab onto the low rung of the bedspread, which is just cheap fiber board, but it seems to be nailed to the wall. The bed is tilting beneath him as Fraser gets onto his knees, crawling up behind him, and Ray tightens his hands, lets his head fall, and braces himself, expecting to get fucked. But Fraser doesn't fuck him, at least not right away. Instead, Fraser slides up behind him, grasps Ray's flexed thighs in his hands, and bends to press his mouth to Ray's lower back. Ray gasps and lurches forward a little, but this time Fraser doesn't stop. Instead, he tightens his hand on Ray's legs and licks a very definite stripe down to Ray's ass. And for a moment, Ray is so tense that he can hardly breathe, but Fraser's tongue is relentless, and Ray feels like his bones are melting. It's nothing like he's ever felt before, and he can't understand why he doesn't feel ashamed. But he doesn't. Instead, he feels almost like crying. Not in a sad way, but in the way he sometimes wants to when he's drunk. And after Fraser sucked and nibbled and tongue-fucked him for what feels like an hour, Ray sure feels drunk, loose-limbed and drowsy and riding wave after wave of pleasure, dry-cumming whenever he crests. He's sweaty and leaning his head on his forearm when Fraser asks softly, Ray? Condom? In my jacket pocket. Ray's talking in the slow, over-precise way he talks when he's drunk, too. The mattress dips as Fraser knees his way to the edge and pulls Ray's jacket off a chair. Ray's whole body is throbbing, almost aching. His circuits are fried from all the excitement racing through him. Still, he wants Fraser to fuck him, not because it'll feel good. Ray doesn't think he can feel any better than he does right at this second, but because he wants Fraser inside him. If Fraser puts his cock in Ray's ass, they'll be connected in the deepest way there is. They'll almost be one person for a few minutes, and right now, Ray feels like he needs that level of intimacy to make up for all those really shouldn'ts and better nots that are taking over their other lives day by day. Ray lifts his head and sees Fraser slicking the condom down his cock. While I'm young, Fraser, okay? Ray asks softly. Fraser takes a deep, nervous breath and nods. Then he scrambles to position himself behind Ray, cock bobbing as he moves. Are you ready? Fraser asks, and Ray grins helplessly and then giggles stupidly, despite himself. Fraser, Ray says, and he's breathless and kind of giddy. I passed the sign for ready, like, 20 minutes ago. I am the readiest of the ready. I am Ready Freddy, Ready Steady, Ready Whipped. Ready is my middle name. I have achieved a state of readiness the likes of which no man has ever... The slick, round head of Fraser's cock pushes into him, and the words die in his mouth. He's only conscious, then, of Fraser's arms around his torso, hard and unrelenting, holding him up so that he doesn't fall face first onto the mattress. He's thoroughly limp, his body stretching and rhythmically convulsing around the length of hard cock inside him. Fraser moves slowly, steadily, fucking him with deep deliberation. Ray tries to speak, to say, "Oh yeah, give it to me, more," but no sound comes out. Fraser alternates long, deep strokes with shorter, harder ones that nudge against his prostate, and even though this is the best fuck ever, Ray's mouthing words that won't take shape. Fraser seems to have himself under control, but his voice gives the game away. "Oh, God, yes, God, Ray," Fraser moans, almost despairingly, pressing his lips to Ray's goose-pimpled back to stifle his mouth. Still, though, Ray can hear his helpless grunts and moans. Finally, though, Fraser cries out, hips bucking wildly, and Ray spasms an orgasm for what has to be the 17th time. This time he's not alone, though, because Fraser's moan is low and prolonged, and he's coming, cock thrumming deep inside Ray as he shoots off. Gasping, Fraser falls on top of him, flattening Ray beneath him on the bed. Fraser feels huge and smooth and sweaty on top of him. "Ray," Fraser gasps out, "I love you. I... Ray closes his eyes and smiles to himself. "Yeah, Fraser. I know," he murmurs. "Right back at ya." He's startled awake and opens his eyes into white morning sunlight, so different from the dusky blue and pink neon he fell asleep to. Fraser's awake, too, and sitting beside Ray with his knees drawn up. Apparently Fraser's been shaking his shoulder, because Fraser hastily yanks his hand back. "Sorry," Fraser says apologetically. I wasn't sure if you needed to wake up." Ray looks at the digital clock on the nightstand. 8 a.m. Fuck. "What about you?" Ray asks, jerking upright. "You gotta open the consulate." Fraser cracks his neck, then turns his face away. Like the wall near the bathroom is really fascinating. "I've expressed the view that it's unfair for me to have to open the consulate each morning just because I live there. In fact, before I took up residence, the consulate used to be run at much more reasonable hours. It isn't as if it's a consular policy to open early. It was just something I used to do because..." Fraser stops and seems to have to think about it. "Well, because..." Ray's glad Fraser isn't looking his way, because he's fighting a grin, and he doesn't want Fraser thinking he's making fun of him. "Fraser, it's okay. Don't open the..." "Because I didn't have anything better to do," Fraser says finally, and there's a kind of defiance in the upward tilt of his chin. "That's the real reason. No better way to spend my mornings, and my office, charitably speaking, is small and..." "So let Turnbull do it. No reason you have to be there every morning." But Ray's suddenly realizing the implications of this. Fraser lives at the consulate. It's bound to be noticed if he's not there in the morning. But Fraser hears the uncertainty in his voice, turns around, and instantly reads the problem off his face. "I've given them to understand that I'm pursuing a young lady," Fraser says quietly, seriously. "Will that do?" "Will that do?" Ray's not sure what it's supposed to do. It's making him crazy is what it's doing. Still, he's got to admit that it's sensible. Fraser's got to say something, and Ray doesn't see him telling Inspector Thatcher, "Well, sir, after a year of flirting, Detective Kowalski and I are finally getting it on." He realizes a second later that Fraser's frowning at him expectantly, waiting for an answer. "Yeah, Fraser. Yes, that'll do fine." And Fraser nods in what seems like relief. Thatcher's probably jealous as all hell, Ray realizes a second later, and his mouth twists with mean pleasure despite himself. "And Franny's gonna freak when she..." "Hey, what are you gonna do when they ask you who the girl is?" Ray is completely taken aback by the grin that breaks out across Fraser's face. "I shall deny it, of course." And then Fraser's laughing, a strong, loud, totally unfamiliar sound. A shock of dark hair falls down across his forehead, and he shoves it back with a careless flip of his hand. "That's how I informed them of her non-existence in the first place. I asked Inspector Thatcher to kindly ignore any rumors she might hear concerning me and a young lady. I informed her, in no uncertain terms, that no such woman existed, that there was no woman in my life, and it was highly unlikely that there should be one in the future." God, you should have seen her face. Fraser ducks his head, and something very like a giggle escapes him. Of course, she thinks I'm lying, and that there must be a woman.
But Fraser...
Ray feels his heart sink. He's sure he spotted the flaw in this brilliant scheme. How can she possibly think you'd lie? You don't lie. Everyone knows you don't lie.
Well, that's true, as a general rule. But Inspector Thatcher believes me quite capable of lying to protect someone I love,
Fraser explains, and then he adds, thoughtfully, she's right, of course. When that really sinks in, unexpectedly, later that day, Ray grins so hard and so long that Franny asks him if he needs to lie down or something.
You look, she says, backing away suddenly, like you might just snap and start killing people.
And Ray laughs and decides to take it as a compliment. He doesn't draw any new cases the next couple of days, which means that he can sit around, work the phones, follow up leads. He calls Fraser and tells him not to bother showing up, which is just as well, because he doesn't want anyone connecting Fraser with the funny way he's been walking since their last night at the Ashland. Sometimes, mostly at inconvenient times, Ray gets grabbed by the memory of Fraser fucking him up the ass, and he has to run to the bathroom and jerk off. And then, there, leaning against the flimsy blue stall partition and desperately jerking his cock, Ray's really, really glad that Fraser's not in the station, because someone's gonna notice. Someone has to notice. Dewey, goddamn him, notices Fraser's absence.
Hey, he says, where's your red-breasted friend? I thought you two guys were joined at the...
White light behind his eyes. In his fantasy, he leaps out of his chair, grabs Dewey by the pug-ugly shoulders of his plaid jacket, and shoves him back against the wall. Then he holds Dewey in place with a forearm across the throat and growls, not one more word. Do you hear me? I don't want to hear one more word out of you. But that isn't what happens. Instead, Dewey comes out with his last word, hip. And Ray just shrugs and leans back in his creaky wooden desk chair and says, yeah, I haven't seen a lot of him lately. They probably got him working overtime, counting polar bears, registering ice skates, ticketing dog sleds. Dewey agrees. And then they're laughing because, hey, they're real cops and the Canadians are just bureaucrats in stupid outfits. And Ray feels like he's killed Fraser a little. So he grabs his leather jacket off the back of his chair, bolts out of the bullpen, and hightails it across town to see Fraser. The consulate should be closed by now, but the door isn't locked yet. Ray heads up the deserted wood-paneled hallway and hangs a left to Fraser's office. The door is open, and Ray kind of swings in, holding on to the doorframe. Fraser, he says, and Fraser's head jerks up, and Jesus God, Fraser's pretty. Even when he's frowning.
Ray.
Fraser doesn't look at all pleased to see him.
What are you doing here?
I was thinking, Ray said, and he's not really sure why he sounds so breathless or so desperate.
Or wondering, really, if you wanted to.
But Fraser stands up and interrupts him, already shaking his head.
I'm sorry, Ray. I haven't really got the time to talk.
And fuck, Fraser's looking at his watch.
I have a previous engagement,
Fraser explains awkwardly, but then his face clears and he says,
unless you wouldn't mind giving me a lift, that would be a great help, and then we could talk in the car. How's that?
And Ray's pretty sure his mouth is actually hanging open, but he manages to say, sure, Fraser, I'll take you anywhere you want to go. And Fraser smiles and says, great, just give me a moment to change my clothes. And then he coughs and makes an odd gesture with his finger and adds, perhaps you might chat with Inspector Thatcher while you're waiting. And Ray jerks around and whoa, okay, there's Meg Thatcher right there, arms crossed across her red uniform jacket and tapping one pointy leather toe.
Detective Vecchio, Inspector Thatcher says, forcing a tight, fake smile. It's good to see you. Why don't you join me for a drink?
And okay, this is just too weird. Ray's never been, like, king of the SATs or anything, but he's normally not this far off the page. One last look at Fraser, whose face is totally fucking unreadable, and Ray's confusedly following Thatcher back towards her huge plush office. Thatcher goes to a carved wooden sideboard, picks up a decanter, and carefully pours them each a drink before turning around.
So, Thatcher says, and offers him a glass of some pale yellow liquid.
Detective, and that's the end of the pleasantries right there. I want you to tell me right now everything you know about this woman Fraser's seeing.
Wham!
and suddenly Ray's on the same page, but the second he opens his mouth to protest, Thatcher cuts him off. I assure you, Detective, that I have absolutely no motivation for asking this other than the natural and totally justifiable concern of a commanding officer for a subordinate. And now she's off and pacing a rut in the carpet. I take my duties as the chief inspector of this consulate quite seriously, and it's my responsibility to protect my personnel while we're on foreign soil. And I needn't tell you, Detective, that while Constable Fraser is a man of many skills, most of which are impractical in this climate, and several of which seem unfathomable by any standard, there is no doubting that when it comes to women, particularly American women, particularly urban American women, Constable Fraser exhibits a naivete that borders on willful ignorance. Yeah, Ray agrees, and this seems to mollify her. She stops in front of him and searches his face, trying to decide if he be friend or foe. I mean, Ray adds quickly, I see where you're coming from, and I understand, like, that your motives are pure and everything, but honestly, I don't know all that much. Thatcher glances over her shoulder at the door. But he told you he's seeing a woman. For a moment, Ray doesn't know how to respond, but then it's like he hears Fraser's voice in his head. Just tell her the truth, Ray. Fraser said something about that, yeah, Ray says, and Inspector Thatcher visibly sags with relief. I knew it, she murmurs. But didn't he say who? You haven't met her? Nope. I mean, he's my friend and all, but you know Fraser. He plays things pretty close to the vest. Plus, we haven't been seeing a lot of each other lately. There's been no new cases, and he hardly ever comes down to the station anymore. Inspector Thatcher stares off into the distance, and Ray can see that this information only confirms her suspicions. Plus, believe me, I'm the last person Fraser's gonna introduce to his girlfriend, because I'm his boyfriend and I'll rip her fucking throat out. We're a little competitive about... Are you ready, Ray? They turn, and there's Fraser in the doorway, dressed in civilian clothes. Black pants, white shirt, black leather jacket. I don't want to be late. Sure, Fraser, sure, Ray says, and then he turns to share a sympathetic look with Thatcher. Sorry I couldn't be of more help. But she just waves this away. Mentally, she's already dismissed him. It's all right, Detective. It's good to see you. And then Ray's following Fraser down the hall, through the front door, down the steps to where he's parked the car. Okay, Ray says, once they're all buckled up. So where do you need me to take you? Fraser looks at him like he's dim, and all of a sudden, Ray gets it. All a ruse, all for Thatcher's benefit. Gotcha. Never mind, Ray sighs, and turns the car towards the Ashland. But what do I tell her when she asks me where I took you? Tell her the truth, Ray, Fraser says, sounding eerily like the Fraser who always talks in his head. Tell her you took me to a hotel. Fraser settles down into the Chevy's bucket seat and adds, I find the truth's always best. Nothing confuses people more. Later, when they've checked into their room and they're kissing urgently, and Ray's got his hands up under Fraser's white, button-down shirt, Fraser murmurs, Give me a lift, Ray, and then breathes hot laughter against the sensitive skin of Ray's neck. So Ray gives Fraser a lift, first with his hand and then with his mouth, and when he raises his head from Fraser's pale, soft belly and sees him sprawled and panting on the bed, all Ray wants to do is roll on top of him and hump himself to orgasm. So he does, dropping down onto Fraser's strong body and sliding his cock through the puddle of wetness on Fraser's... Ray! Fraser's hands are gripping his arms, and his voice is saying, Wait! Stop! But Ray can't stop. He's in love with the slide of his cockhead against the smooth, warm skin of... Ray! Fraser says breathlessly, and tightens his grip. Don't! I want you to... I mean, I've been hoping you would... You know. And suddenly Ray does know, and he pushes up on his forearm so he can stare down into Fraser's face. You sure about that? He asks. Fraser's got his most earnest face on, the one Ray knows means he's yanking your chain. Oh yes, Ray, perfectly certain. But Ray can't let it go at that. Because I don't mind being the person who gets fucked in this relationship, he says, and he means that in the nicest way possible. It's kind of a big deal for him, this offer, and some part of him worries that maybe he's rolling over too easily. He's good with being fucked,
but he doesn't want to be Fraser's ass boy. It's been an issue in their partnership, and it's an issue here, in bed. But Fraser's eyebrows have shot up skeptically.
Well, I'm sure you don't, Ray, but I might have to register a complaint. In writing, if need be. Don't force me to it.
Fraser's now stroking Ray's right bicep gently, and Ray grins down at him.
You're serious?
Very much so, yes. In fact, and Fraser's not meeting his eyes now, Fraser's staring at...
What?
The square tattoo on his bicep, a red and black champion logo.
I'm hoping that you'll indulge my, preferences.
Fraser's been using his best hoity-toity syntax, but suddenly he lets it drop and looks at Ray with dark, serious eyes.
I haven't had my choice of sexual partners, Ray. The pleasures of my life have been mainly solitary ones. So what I want, I mean, what I really, really want, and Ray didn't know Fraser could sound so excited and needy and desperate, is to feel your strength and your rhythm and know that you're not me. For a moment, Ray is blinded by the image of Fraser fucking himself in some isolated cabin, pushing something hard into himself and gasping into the cold, silent air.
Sure, yeah, Ray agrees breathlessly. But tell me what to do. How do you want to...
But Fraser just lets his arms fall onto the mattress and tilts his head to the side, showing his throat. The gesture couldn't be clearer. Use me. Do me. And then Fraser adds, just in case, your choice.
His choice. And for a second he can't figure out what he wants more, to see Fraser's face when he fucks him, or the closeness of fucking front to back. But it's the closeness that he wants, and he thinks that's what Fraser wants, too. And so he coaxes Fraser into turning over. Fraser obeys without question, and spreads his legs wide when Ray nudges his thighs apart. And Ray's squeezing lube onto his fingers and appreciating the view. Strong, broad back, round, perfect ass, when his eye is drawn to a red, circular scar at the small of Fraser's back. For a moment, Ray doesn't know what it is. Birthmark? A growth Fraser's had removed? And then he does know, because he's read about this, because the man whose name he's wearing is responsible for this. But holy shit, he didn't understand how close the shot was to Fraser's spine. Ray can see the curve of Fraser's spine down his long, beautiful back, and the bullet hole at the bottom makes it look like an exclamation mark. The bullet must be nestled right next to his spinal cord, and suddenly Ray understands how close Fraser came to being paralyzed. He wants to touch the scar with his lubricated fingers, and he's reaching for it when Fraser murmurs, "Well, I'm young, Ray." And, right, this would be a bad thing to do to Fraser. He doesn't want to harsh Fraser's vibe, so instead he holds Fraser open with his free hand and shoves his fingers deep inside. The shudder travels up Fraser's entire body and lingers in his shaking shoulders. "Oh," Fraser breathes, and then he's pushing back, almost helplessly, against Ray's hands. And Jesus, this is going to go a lot faster than Ray thought it would. He can see that already. He curls his fingers inside Fraser, and Fraser bucks, convulsing, and gasps, "Hurry, I won't last long." Ray swallows hard and pulls his fingers out and lubes his cock and its condom as fast as he can. He's gripping and kneading Fraser's sides reassuringly as he pushes his cock into Fraser's tight, hot body, and he's sucking desperately for air, because his every nerve is on fire, and he just wants to fuck Fraser's brains out. Beneath him, Fraser's moaning erratically, and so Ray blindly wraps his arms around him and rears backward, pulling them close together. He knows he's done the right thing when he feels a hand squeeze his arm. Fraser's wrapped his own arms around Ray's. Ray buries his face against Fraser's hot neck and thrusts into him, pulling Fraser down hard onto his cock. He loves the way Fraser's moaning and shaking in his arms, and so he just lets himself go. His thigh muscles, his abs, are burning as he fucks, but it's so worth it. He can't believe how easily Fraser's body has opened for him, and when he lets a hand slide down Fraser's sweat-streaked belly, he finds Fraser's hand already clutching his erection. Ray covers Fraser's hand with his own, and for a second they're rocking together, hands moving together, completely in sync. Then Ray slides his hand all the way up to Fraser's chin, turning his head to kiss him, and finds Fraser's face wet.
"Fraser," Ray breathes,
his shocked mouth tasting salt on Fraser's skin. His hips jerk suddenly as he loses his rhythm, because holy God, what the fuck has he been? Except Fraser's hand grasps Ray's hip tightly and coaxes him to keep going. So Ray keeps going, but it's all right. Fraser turns his wet face toward Ray, and Ray mouths kisses onto his cheek, his jaw, the soft spot under his ear. It's just... And Fraser takes a deep, shuddering breath, maybe trying to control himself, and whispers, I dreamed of you. And now it's Ray's turn to fight for control, because now his hips are jerking erratically. He forces Fraser down onto the bed to maximize his last few thrusts, because that's it. Game over. He's coming. And beneath him, Fraser's convulsing too. When Fraser finally lifts his head off the mattress, he's flushed, and his hair's damp with sweat, but he looks happy as well as exhausted. I just wanted to say... And Ray rolls over onto his back and stares up through the blue and pink light at the ceiling. You say thank you to me. I'm going to clock you, Fraser. Ah, he hears Fraser say, and then... Understood.